right there.
The request did not, that's correct.
When we get back to the previous conversation here about this relaxation of milestone, the president isn't asking for any money.
I guess it's not my position to say what the president is. Okay. You know, and that's part of the budget formulation process.
It's not necessarily Congress's fault. The budget going to Congress.
Part of the budget formulation is that there's a lot of priorities throughout the country. And so.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
down here, we talk about community regulatory support. That's we do payment in lieu of taxes to the tune of about $7 million to go to Barnwell, Aiken, and Allendale County. We also have our support from DHEC that we have some money go to them, some to EPA, and then our Citizens Advisory Board. And then safeguards and security. This increase here is we have some of our entry control, our alarm system into our secure facilities. It's getting real old. And so this increase there that you're seeing is for us to start replacing some of the systems in the facilities. We've done it in a couple of areas back in the 2012 timeframe, and now we're starting to do it in some of our other areas over the next couple of years. So you can see, from a program perspective, realistically, the 1255 is what the 14 was, and we're working under the omnibus from a 1259. So it's a pretty stable number. In NSA, we go down to the programs here. The first thing I have to ask your forgiveness, I have up here in millions. Actually, that's not right. If you go and take the commas here and put a period instead of a comma, then that's what that's in millions. So I don't want you folks to think that they have $212,000 million. So put the period where the commas are on this page here. Defense programs, that's the Tritium program that we have at the site. That's our state, the operations as far as to extract tritium and replace, refresh tritium in the reservoirs. That goes out to the stockpile. Safeguards and security, this is their share. We just showed on the other one, much larger for environmental management because we have some of the special nuclear materials, and also we're the site landlord, so we have to do the site protection, law enforcement, and all of that. This here, safeguards and security, is just as it relates to the NNSA facilities. The mixed oxide fuel fabrication facility, the number we received was 336. You may recall that the request was for 221. There was a lot of issues raised about whether MOX would be going into cold standby. So this number here is to continue with the construction as they continue to evaluate alternatives for the MOX facility. Waste solidification building is the building that has just completed construction that was to take the waste that comes out of the MOX facility. It just finished its construction this year, and it's going to be placed in a standby condition until whatever occurs with MOX occurs. Don't know how far off it'll be before we will actually need the waste solidification building. Defense non-nuclear non-proliferation, that deals with non-proliferation, bringing materials back, making sure that there's not the proliferative of nuclear materials throughout the world. And then in other programs, a lot of this is it is special programs that are the Savannah River National Lab conducts for the NNSA, and a lot of that is in the classified area. So that theory, when you see it, our budget was roughly ours. The environmental management was 1.2. You see here, budget comes out to 600. So it's roughly about $1.9 billion is the combined NNSA and Indian budget. And that's about it. Any questions?
I can't ever remember numbers, but y'all were thinking about doing 100 canisters or so per year. at what you had requested. So now what does this mean?
Yeah, well, I think in this year that we just passed, we did 126 canisters in 14. In 15, based on those numbers there, we were looking at, I believe, 135 to 150.
Right, 16 number?
Yeah, and so we will still produce that, because even though I was saying that it was slightly less than what Congress appropriated, the pension savings are going to allow us to do the same scope of work that we had for the original higher price. So scope-wise, there will be no reduction. We would agree with you. We'd like to make further progress ourselves.
Mm-hmm. The taxpayer, you would agree.
Any other questions? Doug, thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, who's first? Alan. Alan's going to talk about Sage King.
My name is Alan Gunner. I'm the senior technical advisor to the assistant manager for nuclear materials stabilization. This is the presentation that I gave to the Nuclear Waste Technical Review Board to give them an idea of each canyon. So some of the information you all may have already known. If not, and I'll kind of go through. If you have any questions, please stop me. Here's an aerial view of H Canyon. Kind of give you a reference. This is the actual canyon. Up on top, I call it the penthouse, is HB line. The difference is H Canyon is a remote operated facility. No one goes in. We do everything by remote bridge crane, closed circuit television. HB line is a glove box operation. Operators actually stand with their hands in the gloves doing operations. H Canyon processes spent fuel. Basically, HB line processes plutonium. Out back is our sand filters, which are part of our safety class ventilation program. Over to the side, which isn't here, is part of the H tank farm. So basically, our liquid waste goes from here into the tank farm system. Here's a kind of a flow of the disposition for our materials that come in and out of the state. First of all, give you a color coding. Blue is enriched uranium, red is plutonium. So you can kind of see L Basin over here restores spent nuclear fuel, basically enriched uranium. We are getting foreign research reactor and domestic research reactor fuel coming in. Foreign comes in from various countries, Germany, Austria, Denmark, any of those. Domestic is mostly MIT and Missouri reactor, experimental reactor. GAP, spent nuclear fuel. All the material up in this program is from U.S. origin HEU. The GAP spent fuel is from non-U.S. origin. Give you an idea of one of those was from the country of Chile. So, and there's some others coming in. But this was, you know, the difference here, again, reason we kind of differentiated. One is U.S. origin, which we have obligation to take back. The other is material that we want back due to proliferation issues. So L Basin, we store here. We bring in aluminum clad fuel. It is processed in H Canyon, and I'll walk through some of that in a few minutes. We recover the enriched uranium, downblend it. It goes to the TVA program. Liquid waste, as I mentioned before, goes to the tank farm, to DWPF, Defense Waste Processing Facility. In the red, you've got K area. K area is where we have consolidated the non-pit plutonium from around the complex. Rocky Flats was one of the older sites, Hanford, Lawrence Livermore, Los Alamos National Laboratory, and of course, our own material from F area, stored in K area. There's kind of a lot of coding on here. AFS2 stands for alternate feedback 1. This is a material that is suitable to go directly to the mixed oxide fuel fabrication facility as is. So there's about 4.1 tons that's going to be there that would feed the mock facility. There's a group called AFS2 material. This is a material that we are processing currently in HP line. Either purity-wise or form-wise, it would not be able to go to the mixed oxide fuel fab. NNSA is funding us to process that material in H area. Once we process it, we convert it back to an oxide. It then goes back here to K area for storage, and then that material will be processed in the MOX fuel facility. If MOX doesn't come about, the work that we're doing does support the disposition of that material. Of course, if MOX comes through, you end up with commercial power reactors. Material that we call non-MOXable, now we are planning to downblend and ship to the waste isolation pilot plant. We have already shipped some, and we plan to ship others. There's approximately 5 tons of plutonium that's in the non-MOX category.
Can I ask a question? When you said NSA is funding this, is this outside the funding that they're supposed to give?
No, they give us about $22 million a year for HB line operations. It's the incremental amount of money that we worked out with them for us to process, dissolve, purify, and convert to an oxide. Yes, it's above and beyond that money. It's part of one of those NN programs that they've got listed in there. It's part of the NNSA funds. All right. This is a cross-section of the canyon, and the only thing I'm going to say is, I talked about it being a remote facility. The facility is broken up into three parts, the hot canyon, warm canyon, and what we call the center section where the personnel are. Hot and warm refers to radioactive limits. No one has been in the hot canyon since startup in the 50s time frame. We have done everything through a remote-operated bridge crane. In the old days, a crane operator looked through a periscope, singular dimension, and had to operate. Now we have an overhead bridge crane that has 10 closed circuit television, so he now can see shadows and angles differently. Warm Canyon is, again, people have been in there numerous times since startup, but we do most of our operations through the remote operated cranes. And then the center section is where all the personnel are. First level is basically your motor control electrical. You got coal piping. Third level is our fuel, our feed tanks, everything we try to flow through gravity versus pumping so that in the event of a leak, you don't keep pumping through the leaks. All of our transfers in the canyon are through steam jets that form a vacuum. So you lose the vacuum, you stop the transfer. Then the fourth level is the control room. This is just a picture. You can get an idea of what a crane operator would have to look at if he's going to change out. And we can change out every tank in the facility. We've changed out numerous ones. You can see the spaghetti of piping here on the tanks. The other flexibility of this facility, if normally we go from this tank to this tank, the material comes out and then goes in. However, if we decide we want to change it and run it to a tank at that end, we change this outside piping. So if you look at the facility, you can configure it any way you would like, which provides great flexibility in operations. I'm going to quickly go through the process because we dissolve using nitric acid. We run it through a centrifuge to get rid of any solids. We then run it through what we call first cycle solvent extraction. It's basically oil and water change of valence. You make the plutonium or enriched uranium go to whichever side you want. We separate the plutonium or the product. It can either be plutonium or neptunium. We are not recovering plutonium or neptunium. That is all going to the waste system. We then go through what we call a second uranium cycle just to purify it. We then go out, we downblend, and then we load and it ships to TVA. This is just a section. This is the heart of the canyon. It's a mixer settler. It runs downturn. You basically put a solvent, you put an organic, you spin it in a centrifuge, you let it settle. It separates, like I said, oil and water, and then you do it through a process. There's 18 stages on each of our mixer settlers, so you get very good purification. Another typical overhead view of the facility. We do have a maintenance facility, so we can bring the crane in, do all the PM on that, keep it up to date. Kind of a quickly walk through, unless you all want to discuss, but these are the key NEPA decisions. You've got 96, you've got a, what we call the Foreign Research Reactor EIS, and a ROD that said basically we would start receiving Foreign Research Reactor. We signed 2000, we wrote a spent fuel EIS for our site that talked about at that time melt and dilute versus processing. We were going to melt the material in aluminum billets and then dispose of them. We went through, looked at that in 2013, and actually March 29th, 2013, the Assistant Secretary for Environmental Management signed a supplemental analysis and an amended ROD that instead of doing melt and dilute, we would process 1,000 bundles of fuel, do 200 hypercores, and we recover and downblend the material and ship to TVA, which was a major change. Kind of give you some idea, we had some what we call vulnerable fuel, and this was vulnerable to long-term wet storage. It was not a safety issue at the time, but if you looked in the future, it was vulnerable to long-term wet storage. It came out of the sodium reactor experiment out in California back in the 60s. It was material that had been declad. It was a metallic thorium-based fuel. The concern was if it got a pinhole leak and you got water in with metallic thorium, then you've got a major reaction and you would crap up the basin. So decision was made, we would process that material. In August of 14, we completed that. We've been transferring that material to the waste. It goes directly to the sludge batch because high-level waste does not want thorium, because then the cost of it becomes like peanut butter. So you just add to their problems in the sludge. We did do some high aluminum to allow us to make sure we could transfer it. We began in September 14th, 2014, started processing the 1,000 bundles of fuel that we talked about in the record of decision. And we are continuing to process that material. Waste, you're well aware, waste is an issue. We were having a concern with our liquid waste on how much waste they could accept from the facility, and it was starting to limit. We generate between 150 and 250,000 gallons of waste each year, depending on how much we're processing. We have been doing a very concentrated effort to try to reduce the amount of high-level waste that we've been processing or sending to the liquid waste system. These are the new numbers that are projected we will be sent into the waste tanks and that they can accept is 150,000 gallons this year, 200,000 gallons in 16 and 17, and 18 through 25, about 300,000. Again, these numbers are down drastically. They are as a result of our waste minimization efforts. That's why you can see, you know, they're lower than used to be. We did at least 300,000 to 400,000 gallons. So we have been working on that. I am not going over this. You can have it. This is a tool that we use when we're trying to set missions to figure out, one, you can see up here, plutonium and uranium, but it's also making sure we don't double count our facilities. It's a way of laying it out so that we can see what's going on when and the planning program. There are some upgrades that we've got to do in the infrastructure side of the facilities. These include things like substation transformers, roofs, exhaust fans. We'll tell you now, right now, based on the budget, there's very little money to support this. We are not doing a lot of infrastructure work in those in this facility. We were hoping, but based on the budget that Doug showed, we are using carryover to cover the operation because we got to reduce budget, so we are doing very little infrastructure. We are maintaining all the safety systems, but we're not making a lot of progress. Give you an idea, roofs, we get rainwater intrusion that we have to deal with. There was a question by the Waste Technical Review Board as to could we handle non-aluminum fuel. We have non-aluminum fuel in L area. Question is, could we handle it in H area? The answer right now is no. The Purex process is set up on a nitric acid, as you're well aware. Most of our tanks are stainless, so stainless fuel really won't process. You would have to put in a shear, kind of a shear leak system into the facility. That would require us to put a whole new head end on there. We looked at this back in the mid-80s, time, it was estimated to be well over $500 million cost to do that. That was in the 80s, so now with the new way of doing business, it would be extremely. But bottom line, you would shear the material, you would leach it out using the existing process chemistry, but then you would also have to have the capability to remove the hulls that are left over after processing. And are there any questions?
Around for some better time to make a decision?
There are some discussions. If you remember, we have, and there's still discussion somewhat about the Idaho swap. The Idaho swap was we would send them our non-aluminum fuel. They would send aluminum fuel to us. We would dissolve process. And then our fuel would go out there because they've got a lot of non-aluminum fuel between the naval program that they use to process and everything else. Right now, that is not funded. The thought process today is we would build dry storage capability to package the material so that it could be just directly disposed of at a repository at a later time.
So, thank you for that. Next question is the vulnerable fuel that you processed, the sodium fuel, is that the same as the fuel, the vulnerable fuel that the rod talked about?
Yes.
So you have finished essentially what the rod was.
Well, we consider the vulnerable fuel we have finished, yes.
And you're working on the 1,000 bundles.
Correct.
So that rod bonds what? When you talk about infrastructure upgrades,
mm-hmm.
are they such that you will have to quit processing in a reasonable
They could impact processing, frame? Yes. Give you an idea. We have transformers, electrical switchgear. Not part of the safety system. The safety systems are on a separate switch gear, but this would be part of your switch gear that if it went out, yes, I would stop operating. And we would either have to fix it or you determine you're going to terminate processing at that point. But yeah, they do not impact the safety basis of the facility, but they do impact the operational capability of the facility.
So you will not have to, so you wouldn't have to stop processing in H Canyon because the system, processing system was so downgraded that the safety was compromised, but you may have to stop because things break.
Right, correct.
We are investing in that infrastructure, just not as fast as we would like to invest in it. So, for instance, in 15, we'll start designing some of the switchgear replacement, but we've got three independent sets in H, K, and L that will need to be replaced about the same time. And so we'll design in 16, we may only replace one of those in 16. Ideally, we'd like to be replacing all of them. We just don't. So we are investing in the infrastructure, just not as much as we like.
I came from a college that lost a transformer. It was put in the 60s. They had shut down for 3 days, and there are only 10 transformers like that in the country. I had to buy them all. So, you know, doesn't take much to stop something dead in its tracks. So my last question, I think, is you talked about your reducing the volume of waste that you're producing. Can you just
give me example one? You know, we're processing plutonium for HB line, right, for NNSA. Basically, you take the plutonium nitric acid up through into HB line, run it through your anion exchange columns. You pull the plutonium off the solutions. What comes back down is nitric acid. We are now looking at recycling that nitric acid as your makeup tank for processing spent fuel. Otherwise, I'd be putting brand new clean acid into the dissolver and generating additional. We are also looking at different things of acid strikes to try to reduce the amount of acid going over to the liquid waste system. We are restarting the acid recovery unit where we will be recovering nitric acid from our process, general process. That's been in the past. You recover it, it will generate 50% nitric acid, which is what we use in the dissolvers in the process. So we're trying to get all of those systems back up as well as do innovative things like using acid from HB line as your makeup solution for the canyon itself, which you reduce your process. If we did not recycle some of the acid and do some of the waste man, we'd be generating well over 500,000 gallons of waste a year. And we know liquid waste could not support that. So we are working to reduce or eliminate the waste versus, you know, limiting production.
So the following of that is your 150 to 300,000 gallons a year. I know it's not gallon in, gallon out.
Right.
But is the tank farm actually gaining space, or are you putting in more than they're getting rid of?
The tank. Here, you can correct me, but
the tank farm,
our input to the tank farm is a minor contributor to the tank,
okay.
The inventory of liquid waste. They recycle much more coming back from DWPF into the system as far as volume than what we put in.
You're not stressing the available space.
Given ARP, MCU, and its operations reduce some of the salt volume from the tank farms. We're basically holding our own or gaining a little space,
okay.
In the tank farms. Not significantly until SWPF comes online, but we are holding our own. Not really adding each year,
so
we're keeping stable.
That's what I want.
Are we filling up?
Yeah. Thank
you. Anybody else? Thank you, Alan. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
One quiz is to you. You need light. Leave the other one on. Sorry.
Maxine.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I'm trying to make sure I get it all on the same.
Okay. Sorry. Hi, I'm Maxine Maxted. I'm the DOE Spent Fuel Program Manager for the Savannah River Site, and I'm going to tell you about L Area. Hope I can operate this. L Area basically was expanded in the 90s. When we say expanded, not the actual facility, the rack space within the facility was expanded so that we could handle the receipts that were being projected from our foreign and our domestic research reactors. It's basically a 3.4 million gallon swimming pool. It's equivalent to 5 Olympic swimming pools, just to give you an idea how big that is. We have pool depths that range from 17 to 50 feet. Our normal operating depth is about 30 feet. We already talked about what we receive. Just so you get an idea, these are our rack spaces. We have two configurations, a 3x10 or a 4x10. This is our actual facility. It is an old reactor that was converted. You saw in Rob's presentation where they had gone in and attacked this piece to immobilize it. Ours is still operational. We have replaced two roofs, this roof and this roof level here. Those were our most vulnerable. We still have about 5 more to do. We're in the process of finishing another one. We will probably not do any more for a while until we get some more funding. We only have one transfer bay, so it is our hold point on receipts coming in and receipts going out. So we have all of our operational activities are focused around that one transfer bay. We are very proud of our water quality. It's actually used as a model by the IAEA for other reactor facilities. We have very clear water. We make sure of the conductivity. We check pH. We check for cesium. We check for tritium. We check for alpha. And then the water, as it says on here, it goes through our sand filters every 32 hours. That 3.4 million goes through every 32 hours. And then all of the basin water goes through the ion exchange every 13 days. Just to make sure that the water is kept at a neutral position so that we don't have any way of affecting or accelerating any corrosion of the fuel.
I think this is,
yes. We have a water level monitor. It's not modern. It's we have basically a ruler on the side of the depth of the pool, and we have to daily go and do an operator round to check that water. We do have to add water because of evaporation, so they do have to check, and there's a range that we have to stay within to meet our safety requirements. Now, ours is a little bit different than commercial because our fuel's not as radioactively hot as theirs is, and our water is more for protection of our workers than actually the fuel. We could actually lose the water in the pool, and we would still not have a meltdown. Right now, most